We're going to begin with a review of what we did last time. What we did last time was basically the top of Chav Tes Amud Beis. Okay, if you look at the very top of the page, you'll see a Chav Tes and two dots. Or if you have a different text, it might give a number. I don't know what you have there. You're on Chav Tes Amud Aleph, so which is fine, because we're actually going to start at the very bottom of the previous page,
right.
Which I may not have given you in this little handout. So,
which is fine.
No, the last five words. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah HaKol Modin.
Okay,
because the question that we were dealing with was the debate between the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda as to if there is a father who has to redeem his son, and then he discovers or realizes that he has not been redeemed himself, who needs to be redeemed first? Okay, that was the question that was the debate between the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda. The rabbis were of the opinion that he has to be redeemed first, and Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that the father needs to redeem his son because that's his mitzvah. His own redeeming of himself is a fallback position to the fact that his own father, neglected to redeem him. Now, of course, there are circumstances which could make it that the father is not around, right? Sometimes it happens, unfortunately. Lo aleinu, sad to say, that a father doesn't live to see his son be 30 days old, right? It could happen. So it's not the fault of the father, but nevertheless, the person discovers that he hasn't been redeemed, then it was still somebody else's mitzvah before it was his own mitzvah. So even if that person was absent. Okay, it's not his own mitzvah to redeem himself. It's his father's mitzvah to redeem himself. The father wasn't there. Okay, it's the story. All right, what happens nowadays? Nowadays you have this. I actually, I did this once, more than once. I've done a bris for an IVF baby, but the first time that I remember doing it, there was no man in the relationship. Okay, it was just an Orthodox girl, actually, and she was not married. I'm pretty sure even today she's not married, although I know she has several children now. And there was no man involved, right? Just a donor. And so what's the deal with that child? Right? Is he Peter Rechem? I would say he is, right? I mean, he's the first that issued from her womb. So what's the story? Right? Does he need to be redeemed?
Yes.
So the answer is yes. Whose mitzvah is it to redeem him? His mother's? We've already seen that. No, it's not her mitzvah. No. Can she take care of it? We're getting into sticky questions. Can he do it for himself? Could his grandfather? He has a grandfather. Could his grandfather redeem him? The answer is
yes.
Probably, yeah. It's a mitzvah in the family. So I'm trying to remember if they're Kohanim or Levium. I don't think that they are. Oh, wait, actually, no, they might be Levium, come to think of it.
Then there's no
pidyon anyway. What?
If the child, you don't know what the father is.
The donor.
No. In other words, she's a Bas Levi.
So it's not.
There wouldn't be a pidyon of Ben anyway. There wouldn't be a pidyon of Ben. Yeah, she's a Bas Levi. If the baby's any grandfather is a Kohen or a Levi, there's no pidyon of Ben. So that happens to be in that case. But there are other similar situations. And presumably, if she hasn't had a miscarriage prior to this, and of course, if the baby's not a C-section, and if it's a boy, then the child would need to have a pinyon of Ben. All right, anyway, now we're getting a little beyond what the Gemara. I'll leave the modern, the contemporary poskim to deal with that question, okay, and how to deal with that. But anyway, so that was the question that we saw between the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda. So at the very end of the previous page, the last five words were, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, HaKol Modin. That was what we saw. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, everyone agrees, and now we're on to the next page. Kol Hecha, now it's the page which I gave you, Kol Hecha, Deleka Ela Chamesh Slaim, Hu Kodem Livno. Okay, that Rabbi Yirmiyah says, everybody agrees, that when you only have, right, Kol Hecha Deleka Ela, Deleka Ela is a double negative. Deleka Ela means, Leka means you don't have, right? If you get rid of the middle letters, Yud Kuf, what do you see? Lamed Aleph. What does Lamed Aleph mean? No. Okay, you don't have, as opposed to the word Ika, which we see two lines below it, in the middle of the line, right? Ika, you see the word Ika?
Yeah.
Dalet is like the Hebrew letter Shin, which the Dalet in Aramaic. The Dalet prefix in Aramaic is like the Hebrew prefix Shin. It means that. So kol hecha, delek, kol hecha means all places. Deleka, where you do not have ella, except for, or rather, chamesh slaim, five sela. We talked about how sela is a rock, but a sela in Gemara's time refers to a kind of coin. Okay, and certainly in the when the Torah describes the pidyon haben, that's the way it's done. Okay, so kol hecha deleka ella, where you don't have except means you only have. So kol hecha deleka ella chamesh shloim, every place deleka ella where you only have, because it's a double negative, where you only have five shloim, the requisite amount of money necessary to do the redeeming of a firstborn, who kodem livno. He comes first. Okay? Who comes first? Meaning the father. Okay, the father is redeemed first. Because you only have five slain. Why? And that was where we get to my timer. My timer, that's the next two words. Okay, now remember in the past, if you look here, look folks, in the little packet I gave you, you turn it over, you see this page. So we're reviewing. Okay, I'm going to go a little faster than we normally go at this point because we're reviewing. So look at the bottom entry, where it says, my taima. My taima means, what is the reason? My taima is an information question. My is like the Hebrew word ma. Memhei means what? Taima is like the Hebrew word ta'am. Ta'am means the reason. Okay, what is the ta'am? Now, ta'am also comes from the word flavor, it means taste, but one of the definitions of the word ta'am is a reason. Okay, my taima is an information question, asking for either the logic or the Torahitic source of a certain law or statement. So the issue under discussion is sometimes described before the phrase, in which case my taima concludes the question. Okay, so the issue which we've basically seen is that the father comes first if there's only enough money to do one redemption. Okay, so that's the issue which we're discussing, and my taima is going to conclude the question. At other times the issue is presented afterwards my taima. So here we see, what he's saying is that after my taima, you're going to have either a logical explanation or a Torahitic source for the answer. Okay? So we'll play the game. What is it? What is the answer here? Is this a Torahitic source or is this a logical answer? My taima, mitzvah dugufei adifa. Is that a Torah source?
No.
How do you know that?
Doesn't say.
Right. Well, it's in Aramaic. That's a good indicator. The Torah is not written in Aramaic. There's no shenamar, dichsiv. You don't have these code words which indicate that the Torah says. Or even if the Torah, even if the Gemara doesn't use one of the intros, those introductory words, when the Gemara quotes a pasuk, what does it do? Right. It puts a little circle. I mean, depending on which version of a Gemara you have, but certainly in this Gemara, it would be a circle. In the article, they might put a little letter. Okay, to indicate that it's a footnote somewhere. There's no footnote here. So, mitzvah degufei adifa. That's what it means. Mitzvah degufei adifa. A mitzvah. What's a mitzvah? A mitzvah, right? Nicely translated. You translated the Hebrew word into English. What's a mitzvah? A mitzvah. Very good, right? No, a mitzvah is a commandment. Okay, that's the correct translation of mitzvah. Mitzvah does not mean good deed. Some mitzvos happen to also be good deeds, but mitzvos are commandments. They have in them the word tzav. What is tzav? Tzav means command. Okay? So that's one of the reasons why calling the Ten Commandments Ten Commandments is actually a very bad translation. Because it's not Ten Commandments. It's not called the Aseres HaMitzvos. It's called the Aseres HaDibros. Aseres HaDibros means 10 statements, 10 utterances. Okay, anything but Ten Commandments. As a matter of fact, if you look in the Sefer HaChinuch, he'll tell you how many mitzvot are in the Aseres HaDibros? 14 or 15. 14 or 15 commandments in the Aseres HaDibros. So you can't say there are 14 or 15 commandments in the Ten Commandments, because that doesn't make any sense. There are 14 or 15 commandments in the 10 statements in the Aseres HaDibros, and it's the second of the Dibros, which talks about not having any other gods, not bowing down to them, not worshiping them, not serving them, etc., that has more than one commandment. So you get that. And also, Lo Sachmod has two commandments in it. Okay, anyway, I'm getting lost. So mitzvah degufei adufa. Mitzvah means a commandment. de gufei, what is a guf? A body. De gufei, that's the Aramaic suffix, which is the same as the Hebrew suffix of a vav. What's the Hebrew suffix of a vav? Hebrew suffix of a vav? Him. Mitzvah de gufei, it's a mitzvah on his body, on his own body. Adifa is like the Hebrew word adif, which means is preferred. Okay, in other words, it takes precedence. So mitzvah de gufei adifa. That's the Gemara's answer. My taima, why does Rabbi Yirmiyah say that when you have two people who need redemption and there's only money for one, that the father comes first? Because it's a mitzvah on his own body. He needs to be redeemed. Yeah, like it needs to be taken care of. And that really shouldn't be delayed any longer. I mean, obviously we can make the same argument for the child, but here there's only X number of dollars, you know, salaim. We only have 5 salaim available. So that's Rabbi Yirmiyah's point. So then what does that mean? So well, we have a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the rabbis. Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, we have a debate between them. So then the Gemara comes along and explains what are the circumstances under which Rabbi Yehuda and the rabbis are arguing, are debating. Okay? That's what the Gemara is going to do now. And that's what the next two words indicate to us. How do we know? How do we know that this is going to be, that it's introducing a new idea? Because look at what it says. You have to silence the phone. You have to, not silence, you have to put it on airplane mode. If you put it on airplane mode, then nothing comes in. Or you could turn it off. Yeah. That's another option. Always, I just put it on airplane mode.
Okay.
All right, don't worry about it. Anyway, okay. So now, let's take a look at this line. We're going to play our game. What's our next clear pause? Okay, so that's not a clear pause. That's a clear repeat.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I want a clear pause. Correct. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda. And basically, anytime it's very rare that the Gemara. I mean, it happens, but it's very rare that the Gemara will talk about a rabbi like in the middle of a sentence. Okay, so if you have the name of somebody, it might, you know, it's usually a good indicator that there is a break. Now it depends on if you have the word Omar or Savar, whatever the word that's describing the verb, you know, the action that he's involved in. So in this case, you're going to see Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Savar is like the word Svara, which means he thought, his opinion was. So, but Rabbi Yehuda for sure is going to be a break. So that means that from the beginning of the third line until until Rabbi Yehuda's name, we definitely have a break right before Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so that means that our phrase is Ki pligi hecha deika chamesh b'shubadim v'chamesh b'nei chorin. Okay, now Gael noted before that we have a repeat. Not exactly a repeat; it's a contrast. Okay, and it's something which I actually alluded to earlier at the beginning of the page. What does it say? Kol hecha de deleka, and what do we have? Hecha de Deika. Everybody see that? In the middle of the third line, third word, ki pligi hecha deika. Okay, so that's a contrast. Hecha deleka means where or when you do not have. Hecha deika means where or when you have. Okay, so that's the contrast. And the Rabbi Yirmiyah's point was that any time you only have 5 slaim, 5 of those redeeming coins, that the father comes first. That's when you only have hecha deleka ella, where you do not have except, meaning you only have 5. But kol hecha deika, not it doesn't say kol hecha, but hecha deika. And now what do we have? Chamesh meshubadim v'chamesh b'nei chorin. I know I skipped the phrase kipligi. We're going to get back to that in a second. Okay, hecha deika. Hecha deika, so that's the contrast to hecha deleka. And now we have chamesh meshubadim v'chamesh b'nei chorin. And we know to stop there because the next word is Rabbi Yehuda. So what do we have? We have chamesh meshubadim v'chamesh b'nei chorin. So where's the break between those? Okay, so you have the V in v'chamesh, but not only that, you have the word chamesh. What does the word chamesh mean? Okay, chamesh means five, but it's repeated. Chamesh b'shubadim and chamesh b'nei chorin. Now we all know what b'nei chorin means because we read the Haggadah. B'nei chorin means free people, right? Right. Once we were slaves, and now we're b'nei chorin. Are we talking about slavery here? Okay, are we talking about slavery here?
No.
So there's another way to understand what B'nai Chorin means, and that's why I gave you the what I called last week the reserves. Okay? So if you just open up your little packet for a second, you'll see footnote number 2. Okay, this is from the Art Scroll. The term Nechasim Mishubadim, okay, which is translating as beholden property, refers to land, everybody with me? Footnote 2? Refers to land that a debtor owned at the time he incurred a debt, but has since sold to a third party. Such property is beholden. Okay, so what does this mean? It means that I borrow money, and basically I have a piece of property that is standing in a sense as collateral against the money that I'm borrowing. Okay, now I'm in worse straits, and I can't just borrow, I have to sell my property. Okay, so I'm selling property. But the guy who lent to me the money was kind of counting on that if I can't pay him back, that he's going to take the money out of my assets. Well, what did I just do? I just sold my assets. So that money, he can theoretically, halakhically, he is allowed to lay claim on the land that I just sold, because I'm being dishonest. I have to say, at the very least, I should sell my property and pay him back, right? But the fact that I didn't do that, and I kept the money for myself, it makes it nechasim mishubadim. Nechasim means property, mishubadim, which are beholden. Okay, he could make a claim on it. That's what Nechasim Mishubadim means. Such property is beholden, for the creditor may collect this property from the buyer if the debtor defaults. Land that is still owned by the debtor at the time of default is known as Mechasim B'nei Chorin. Okay, now the guy comes to me and says, you owe me money. And I say, I have a piece of property, no problem. It's mine. I own it. It's free. In other words, it's free and easy. Free meaning such land is free from ownership by a third party, and can be taken directly from the debtor. Okay, so the guy who I owe money to can come along and get back his money from my property. Okay, whether it's the whole property, we'll have to work out the details. Okay, but that's what B'nai Chorin means. B'nai Chorin means it's free, not beholden to anybody. Okay, so if he wants to come and collect money from me, he can get it from me. You don't have to involve anybody else. That's the difference between them. So now, okay, we'll just read the 2 points which are made in continuing this. 2 principles govern the circumstances under which these kinds of property can be repossessed. Number 1, a creditor must always seek to collect his loan from free property before he may confiscate beholden land from a third party. Okay, so in other words, ideally, the guy comes along and he says to me, Bill, you owe me money. And I say, okay, well, I have land you can take from my land. Okay, well, again, however that is assessed. Fine. What if he comes to me and says to me, I have land which I still own, but the land which I actually put as collateral, I already sold that one. So what's he supposed to do? Take from the land which I still own, right? That's the ideal situation. If it happens to be that I don't own any land anymore, then he has to go to the other property. That's the beholden. But ideally, he should take from whatever I own first. That's the first point. From the B'nai Chorin property. And number 2, beholden property can be repossessed only when a document verifying a loan or debt had been drafted when the debt was incurred. Free property, however, may be repossessed whether the debtor undertook the debt verbally or in writing. Okay, so that's why it's important to have contracts when it comes to loans and everything, so that in the event that the person who borrowed the money is a little bit, not on the up and up and sells the property that was the collateral for the loan, then at least the lender can still collect. Okay, but anyway, so that just is an explanation of terms insofar as what the Gemara is going to be using. So now let's go back to the phrase "keep pleading." Yeah.
If the lender, he illicitly sells the property.
Not the lender, the borrower.
The borrower.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the lender now comes and to collect. Claims the property. Mm-hmm. But does he have claim? Does he now been redeemed because he's gotten his money illicitly?
Who?
the original borrower.
It's not a question. It's not a question
of his money. That's what I'm saying.
No. But it's not a question of redeem. No, that's not a question of redemption. That's a question of loans and court.
Since he redeemed himself with these five coins,
you're right.
Right? They really weren't his.
No, that's not the case that the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about what assets does the guy who is ready to do redeeming, what does he have? Okay? He either has five slime in property which is beholden, in other words, which is not available, or not specifically available, or he has five slime in land which is available. Okay?
So if it's not available, and he still sells it...
No, in other words, what are his assets?
If he doesn't own that property.
Right, if he doesn't own that property anymore...
Because he gave it to the lender.
No, he gave it to somebody else.
To a third party.
Yeah, no, the question is, what are the assets that this fellow has? Okay, he hasn't redeemed himself yet.
Right.
Okay, the question is, what assets does he have that would allow for the redeeming to take place? Okay, if he only has five slime, in whatever capacity that he has them, then he can only do one redemption. And Rabbi Yirmiyah said, you redeem yourself.
Right.
The question here is, when he has two theoretical, or maybe one practical, but two theoretical sources of getting five slime, one is from Nechasim Mishubadim, and one is from Nechasim B'nei Chorin, that's where the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan come in as to who comes first. Because how do we evaluate and assess the property which he's claiming to have? Like maybe he's the lender. You know what I mean? Maybe he's the lender, for example, and he doesn't have, and it's just a question of what money can he get back for himself. So for the B'nai Chorin money, for example, it's easily accessible. The Nechasim Mishubadim is not easily accessible. So that's the question. Now he wants to redeem him. He wants to do these redemptions. So what comes first? That's what the word Ki Pligi is. Ki Pligi means, and the Pligi comes from the word Pelik. Like the Dor HaPlaga, or Dor HaFlaga. Dor HaFlaga refers to the generation of the Tower of Babel. Why are they called the Dor HaPlaga? Because they separated. Okay? So Ki Pligi means the point of separation. When you talk about, this was my model last week, some of you were here, some of you were not. Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, they agree as long as there is only five slain. What's their point of separation? Once there's more than five slime. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan agree. As long as if they're five slime, they agree. But their point of separation, Ki Pligi, where they separate, in other words, where they disagree, where they have a debate, concerns where there's more than five slime, when there are two sets of five slime. But the two sets of five slime are differently accrued monies. Okay. If the guy has 10 slime and it's in his bank account, then it's in a much easier question, but again it would be the same debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan, but anyway, so this is that's the situation that we find ourselves in. So Ki Pligi again means where their point of separation is, and their point of separation is they have two sets of five slime, and the two sets of five slime are. One set is beholden, and one set is free. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda, so now, let's find our next break. Let's find our next break. Okay, the easiest one, by the way, the easiest clear break is going to be the Rabbanan. I'm cheating a little bit for you. Okay, because remember, the Gemara is now explaining to us where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan disagree. So we have Rabbi Yehuda telling us one thing. And the Rabbanan, if you look one, two, three lines below Rabbi Yehuda, what are you going to see?
Virabbanan.
Okay, so everything up until that is the Gemara giving us Rabbi Yehuda's, the explanation for Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint. And remember, the Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint was that when you have him and his son, who needs to be redeemed first? The son. That was Rabbi Yehuda's view. The rabbi said he is redeemed first. Rabbi Yehuda's view is that the son needs to be redeemed first. Okay? So that's the viewpoint that the Gemara is now going to be explaining in the circumstance of which we have Chamesh Meshubadim, right? 5 Sela in beholden property, and Chamesh B'nei Chorin, 5 Sela in free property, property that's readily available. Okay? So
the rabbi is Tanakama?
In this case, the Tanakama is the first opinion, but we usually refer to the Tanakama if the situation does not identify the first Tana. In this case, when the Gemara depicted this debate between the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda, it mentioned Tanu Rabbanan. Tanu Rabbanan means the rabbis. So it's a consensus, it's a group. Who are the rabbis? Each time it's probably a little different, right? It's not always the same 2, 3, 4, but it's clearly a majority opinion over just Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is standing alone. And you have the rabbis, whoever they may be. Okay? So that's why I keep saying the rabbis and Rabbi Yehuda, because the Gemara said, Tanu Rabbanan.
Okay.
So let's break it down. Okay, Savar. We had that word before, or at least I kind of mentioned it, that Savar is like Amar, but Savar means to have a thought process, or Yehuda's opinion, or Yehuda's thought process was. Okay? So now, we have to break down the rest of this. Okay, let's try to find the break. I'm going to read, and let's see if we can find breaks based on any of the tricks which we've learned in the past. Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Okay, so that's the introduction. Rabbi Yehuda is of the view that, and I'm going to help you here just a little bit because I'm going to give you the punctuation for that next word. The next word is milveh. Milveh means alone. You can also have the word malveh. Malveh means one who lends. And it could also be sometimes read as milove, taking from the borrower. But this is milveh. Okay, it refers to a loan. It's a noun. Milve dechsiv betorah kichsuva bishtar damya bahane chamesh parik librei v'azil kohen vitarif lei lechamesh mishubadim lididei. Okay, those are all the words that are put under Rabbi Yehuda's thought. Okay? So, anything stand out as something which is a repeat? Or another indicator of a break? What? Say again?
Vitarif? Yes.
Okay. Ah, okay, good. So, Va'azil, Kohain, Vitarif lay. So, there's also Vav on Va'azil. Hey, were you doing that because of the Vav or because of the star? The vav. Okay, so we have two vavs there. Va'azil kohen vitarif le. All right. Okay, that's good. So we have a couple of vavs. Anything else? We have chamesh, but not just chamesh. Chamesh meshubadim. Okay, that's a phrase which we said. That's the 5 beholden, right? The 5 which is beholden. Anything else? All right. I'm going to show you another one. Look at the 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line. Okay, look at the fifth line. First word on the line is Dichsiv. Dichsiv means because it is written or as it is written. Okay, Dichsiv. Now, usually when we see Dichsiv, what follows? A little circle, right? It usually indicates that there's a quote. The fact that it doesn't do that here indicates that the word Dichsiv is being used in a different way. It's not. As a matter of fact, what's the word after Dechsiv? Okay, Dechsiv Batorah. Something's so. What's written in the Torah? It's not giving us a quote here. It's giving us something else. Okay, it's telling us about something which is ksiv b'Torah. Okay, what?
It's going to be a mitzvah.
Now, you're one letter off. Not a mitzvah, but a milveh.
Yeah.
Okay, look at the word before. Remember? Milveh alone. Remember I told you, I said I had to cheat a little bit for you. I had to tell you that the word milveh is alone. Milveh d'chsiv b'Torah. Alone, which is written in the Torah. What's the next word?
Ketuvah.
Ketuvah.
Alone, okay. You mean alone like you're borrowing? Not alone, A-L-O-N-E.
L-O-A-N. Yeah, alone, which L-O-A-N. Is written in the Torah.
L-O-A-N. Okay.
Now, really, what does alone mean? L-O-A-N. What is a loan? If you've taken out a loan, what happens now?
It's transferred.
Okay, fine. So now, that's the key. Okay? Remember what the rabbi talked about the Shabbos? That you have a responsibility. Okay, responsibility. So if you have a loan, that means you have a responsibility to pay. Now, what we're talking about here is not really a loan, you know, in the actual technical courtroom, you know, lawyer, whatever, document case, but there is an obligation, a responsibility to pay money. Okay, what are we talking about? What's the topic of our discussion?
Redemption
of the firstborn. Where does that come from? The Torah, right? The Torah. So if parents, or I should say they're not yet parents, if a couple, they have their first pregnancy, and the baby's born healthy, right? All that, meaning not, I mean, I don't mean healthy, I mean he's born through a normal fashion, not through C-section. And the mother's never had a miscarriage, right? And there's no Kohen or Levi grandparentage, okay? So this child needs to have a firstborn. Needs to have a pidyon aben, rather. He's the firstborn, if it's a boy. So what does that mean? This couple, they didn't borrow any money from anybody. What's the loan? The answer is, the Torah says, you had a boy, first issue of the womb, all the circumstances align, everything's correct, you owe money. Is it a loan, technically? Anybody? Saying, is it a loan? I mean, that's not the right word, but that's the word that the Gemara is using. It's money which is owed to the Kohen. So milveh dichsiv b'Torah, a loan which is written on, in other words, there is a debt which is now owed once that child is born. Why is that debt present? There's only one reason why that debt is present.
Because
it's in the Torah. Okay, a person who doesn't follow the Torah, garnished, you don't have to do this. Somebody who follows the Torah now has a debt to a Kohen. That's a rule. Milveh dichsiv b'Torah. Okay, now what's the next word? Kiksuba. Now ksuba we know as a noun, right? It's the marriage document. But look at it as a verb. Something which is written in the Torah, kiksuba, is as if it's written
in a contract.
What's the next word? Bishtar. Shtar is a word I'm sure some of you know. Shtar is a document. Damya. Damya is an Aramaic word, but it's the same as the Hebrew word. What? Not dam. It's like domeh. What is domeh?
Domeh, like.
Yeah, similar. It's like. Yeah, it's very good. It's like, right? Okay. That's the way you know, maybe a teenager or a surfer dude would talk.
Like,
what's
like,
damya? It's like. Yeah, totally is. Okay, so kiksuva bishtar damya. It's like it's written in a shtar, a document. Okay, so remember we talked about how the best kind of way to make a loan is with a document, ideally, right? So what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that this owing of the money to the Kohen, because it is assessed onto the parents or the father by dint of just having a firstborn child, by the Torah, it's as if it's written. It's as if it's written in a document. Okay, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. All right? Now remember, what was Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint? Rabbi Yehuda's viewpoint is, who do you have to redeem first?
The son.
The child. The baby has to be redeemed first. So now the father, who is not yet redeemed, he has according to Rehuda, again, it's not a written out document, it's signed and sealed, but it's as if it is. So who's going to come first? Who has to be redeemed first, him or his child?
His son.
The child, right? Because it's written in the Torah. He has a contract because of the Torah. The contract is, you, Mr. Father, you have to give a coin to redeem your son. That's Rabbi Yehuda's view. Okay? Now let's finish it up. Bahane, okay, so now what do we have? Bahane Chame.
He's saying that the son has to be redeemed first.
The baby, yeah.
The baby.
That was Rabbi Yehuda's view.
Right,
we saw that before. But again, now we're understanding what the situation is. That there are two amounts of five sela theoretically available to him. One is easily available. Chamesh b'nei chorin. The other one is not so easily available. Chamesh mishubadim. Okay, the beholden property. So what does he do? So that's what Rabbi Yehuda is now going to explain. Okay, we're going to start with the word bahane. Now, again, I cheated a little bit because I had to tell you what the word damya means. But once you see how the Gemara is thinking, you can follow the logic. Milva dechsiv batorah keksuva b'shtar damya. You're going to see that kind of phrase. I mean, that's, again, knowing what the word damya means and understanding the lingo of the Gemara and the cadence of the Gemara, that kind of break would become obvious. Milva dechsiv batorah keksuva b'shtar damya. Okay? So now we need to get the rest of this. So we have, again, Bahane Chamesh Parak Lebreva Azil Koin Vitara Flay Lechamesh Meshubadin Ludidei. All right, that's the rest of our phrase. So Morty noted before that the word Va'azil has a Vav and the word Vitarif has a Vav. Okay, so let's start with the first Vav that we have. Okay, Va'azil. Is that a connecting Vav, like blue and gold? Or is it a separating Vav, like idea number one and idea number two? Well, it's very simple. It's just a question of, does libre and va'azil, like, you know, kachol, vilavan, is libre and va'azil, is that a connection of two nouns? Well, I'll tell you that libre is a noun, va'azil is not a noun. I'm trying to think if it's a preposition or a verb, okay? I'm not sure how I would describe it. Grammar was never my forte. Okay, anyway, it's not a noun. I'll leave it at that. Okay, it's not... Okay, beret is a noun, but va'azil is not a noun. So, that means that Morty is correct. Va'azil, vav, this vav, is a break. So that means that we're going to move back, and we're going to break down the phrase beforehand, which is, blessedly, only four words. Okay, bahani chamesh, parik libray. Now, everybody should already know what parik libre means because we've had that many times. Okay, if you were to go back to the previous page, what?
It's to redeem.
Correct. Parik is one of the words that the Gemara uses to describe the redemption process. And bere is like the word bar. Remember, we saw before that yud and hey at the end of a word in Aramaic is like the Hebrew suffix of vav. Vav in the Hebrew as a suffix means him. His, okay? What's bar? Shimon bar Yochai.
Son,
correct. So libre, the lamed is the same in Hebrew and in Aramaic, the lamed prefix, it means two. Bar means son. Yidhei at the end means his. So that means that the word, put it all together, means to his son. Parik libre. He has to redeem to his son. In English, we would say he has to redeem his son. And what are the first two words? Bahane chamesh. Okay, hane. Well, so hane means these. It's like the like hane. With these five, parik libre, he has to redeem his son. Which five? Anybody want to take a guess?
The free five.
The free five, correct. The ones which are readily available and easily accessible. So in that case, Rabbi Yehuda says, since he has five readily available and five not readily available because they're meshubadim, then with the first five, with the readily available five, he's going to redeem his son. And then what's going to happen? The other five are going to what? So now let's see if we can figure this out. The Azil Kohen, now there's a vav there. Okay, so the Azil Kohen, Azil is a verb. I forget what I said before. Okay, the Azil Kohen, okay, Vitarif Lei Lachamesh Bishubadim Lididei. Okay? Now, Chamesh Bishubadim we know is a phrase. We all know what that means. We've discussed it plenty of times tonight. Okay, Chamesh Bishubadim. So Lididei means, so I'm just going to help you out with that one. Lididei means for himself. For himself. For himself, okay? So now we have to break down Va'azil Kohen V'tarifle. What is Va'azil Kohen V'tarifle? Okay, Azil means will go. Azil, so that's again, that's the type of thing that you'd have to, it's a vocabulary thing. You just look it up in a dictionary. Azil Kohen. The Kohen will go. Vitarifle, okay, and tarifle and will. I think I translated last week like tarif means like tariff. What is tariff?
A fee,
right? Vitarifle, he'll collect his fee. Bin nechasim mishubadim lididei, from the nechasim mishubadim, from the beholden property lididei, for this fellow's own redemption. Okay. Does it all make sense now? I mean, once you navigate the breaking down the phrases and the language, well, then it's all plain and clear and simple, right? Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda again, just to review what Rabbi Yehuda showed us, what the Gemara is showing us in terms of Rabbi Yehuda's view, is that if there are two sets of five selaim, one easily available and one not so easily available, with the easily available, the guy will redeem his son. Why? Because he has a loan placed upon him by the Torah. That is more pressing than the loan not placed upon him by the Torah. Whose obligation is it to redeem himself, first and foremost? His father. Okay, he's covering for whatever his father messed up later on, or again, even if his father wasn't around, but for somebody else's responsibility, he'll cover for it later. But first and foremost, he has his own responsibility to his son. So Rabbi Yehuda says, well, with the easy money, redeem your kid. With the difficult money, redeem yourself. And the Kohen will have to go and get the money, which he can do, because he's like the creditor. Is that the right word? Who's the debtor? The debtor is the guy who owes. Right? So the Kohen's like the creditor. So he can go to the Nechasim Mishubadim, and he can collect the money which he's owed in order to get to redeem this guy.
So why did he go to the Mishubadim? I would think it's just the opposite. I would think with the free, like he should, because if he has to, if he's redeeming his, the father,
right?
It's the mitzvah of the father to redeem the son.
So that's the overriding mitzvah.
That's his most pressing obligation.
Right, because
Rabbi Yehuda says, you got to take care of that first and foremost, in the easiest way possible. And since the money which is readily available is the easiest way possible, then that's the first pigeon.
Something that's bothering me, like if it's as if it's written in Torah that it's a obligation, that it's a, you know, it's like this. So coming back to what we read in the back here, I would think that he's entitled to take the Mishubadim money for him to do the redemption for his son.
No, that's not Rabbi Yehuda's view. That might be the viewpoint of the rabbis, which we'll see next.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but that's not Rabbi Yehuda's view. Rabbi Yehuda's view is, you have an obligation to redeem your son. Immediately. First and foremost. Take care of it the easiest way possible.
Okay.
And then the other thing, which is, it's a different responsibility, so it's a little more difficult, a little more complicated, then you'll take care of yourself afterwards. That's Rabbi Yehuda's view.
And he's able to get the five Mishubadim.
Yeah, because the point that's being made is that you still have this responsibility vis-a-vis the Torah So the Kohen can come along and say, you didn't really have the right to sell that property because you should have saved the five selah to be able to redeem yourself as well. And that's why the Kohen can go collect from the other property. Because there was a loan, a much older loan, okay, which needed to be satisfied. Again, so you know, loan, so to speak, I'm using the term loosely.
That's the one that's going after.
Correct, that's exactly. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Va'azil Kohen v'tarifle. The Kohen is going to go ahead and collect in order to help this guy do the requisite redemption. Okay? Now we're at the 45-minute point. We want to just, but let's not leave it hanging. Let's get the... let's see if we can get through the rabbis. Okay, it's just two lines. And I know that. Why? Because two lines under Rabbanan, we have Tana Rabbanan again. You see that? By the star? Okay, so let's do this. Rabbanan Savre. Okay, we know that that's the introduction because it's like Rabbi Yehuda Savar. Rabbi Yehuda Savar means Rabbi Yehuda's thought. Rabbanan Savre, that's just plural. Rabbanan Savre. Milve Dixibia Raisa Lav Kiksuva Bishtar Damya. V'hilkach mitzvah degufei adif. Okay, now, if you read most of what the Rabbanan said, they're just basically disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda's premise. Okay, because it's the exact same language. Let's read it a little slowly. Milve dechsiv be'oraisa lav kichsuva b'shtar damya. It's basically the exact same phrase. The only thing that happened is that he changed the word Torah with oraisa. But it's the same. I mean, oraisa means Torah. Okay, if you're familiar with the phrase a mitzvah d'oraisa, it means a mitzvah from the Torah, which is in contrast to a mitzvah d'rabbanan, which is a rabbinic. Rabbanan means the rabbis, a rabbinic mitzvah. So, what did the rabbis say? Their thought was that milve d'chsiv Torah, a loan which is written b'oraisa in the Torah. Again, what's our loan that's written in the Torah? What are we talking about? We're talking about the mitzvah to do pidyon haben, okay? Lav kichsuva b'shtar damya. It's not as if it's written in a document. Lav just negates. Lav is like the word no. It's like the word low. Lav kichsuva b'shtar damya. No, we don't agree. We don't think that just because it's written in the Torah that it's so binding in the sense of like a written contract. And therefore, v'hilkach mitzvah degufei adif. Okay, that's just the last four lines because we know the Tana Rabbanan is going to be a break. Hilkach means therefore. Mitzvah means a mitzvah. Degufei of his body. Whose body? The daddy. Okay, adif is preferred. So Rabbanan, we saw that before. Okay, we saw that was the Rabbanan's viewpoint that they said a mitzvah that's on the individual comes first. So daddy, you need to take care of yourself. So we don't really care who, you know, which money is more accessible, less accessible. The fact that you're owed this by the Torah doesn't matter. So you take the nechasim, so you agree with the Rabbanan. You take the easy money, redeem yourself, and the more difficult money, and redeem your kid. So that's the debate. What's the order? The order of priority, when both monies are available, just one's more readily available, more easily available. Okay, so you're Baruch Shekivant, you agree with the rabbis, and Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is obviously different, and that's fine. So it becomes a question of either your Masorah, where'd you get it from, or your logical conclusion. And so that's why it's a debate. Now, who do we Paskin like? Okay, I mean, Halavai, we should have that problem. Okay, well, either... Most people, they have money available, and then it becomes a question of who's first. So who do we pass it like? I don't know the answer to that question. Okay, that the Gemara will come to a conclusion and will tell us who we pass it like. Usually, often it tells us that, and but in other cases, the majority rules. So it becomes the rabbis. Okay, after this, we're going to see how the Gemara goes off into a tangent on other related topics. But we've seen the basic debate between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan after they're agreeing that when there is only five slayim, that he comes first. That was the viewpoint of Rabbi Yirmi at the top of the Gemara. There's only five slayim, he comes first, and then later on he'll redeem. And why, by the way? Why do you think Rabbi Yirmi says that if you only have five, that the daddy comes first?
Because
Right, exactly. Because presumably on the timeline, there'll be more time to gather the money and take care of the baby. Who knows, daddy, you may die, right? And it would be a shame if you die without being redeemed, right? More likely that the child will, you know, will live longer. I mean, whatever, we can give every kind of explanation under the sun. But the point being that if there's only five, then the father comes first and then the child. But when you have the money, then it just becomes, that's where the debate kicks in. Okay. All right, everybody. Thank you. I don't remember if we're meeting next week.